Wake up, get out of bed. We have more turnover from one league to another. Surprise, surprise. CBSSports.com College Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Norlander. Wednesday edition means Jeff Goodman and Gary Parrish are national college basketball insiders, our national writers. They're back and joining the show. And we've got a lot to get to, but as we record this, the big news here is Louisville going to the ACC. A lot of this conference turnover has gotten, predictable in its instability, but Louisville is actually a pretty big one, and it follows up what happened Tuesday in Tulane going to the Big East, which Parrish found pretty shocking. We're going to get to all that, plus the games. You know, Indiana killed North Carolina. We're going to get to that. Goodman's on. He was at the Bahamas last week, saw a lot of these teams play. We're going to get to that. But we'll start right now and go right to this this Louisville for Maryland swap. And Parrish, I'll go to you first. You know, I predicted that the ACC would be fine in losing Maryland. Sure enough, that's what happened, because it gets the hoop upgrade, Louisville coming in. You know, this has all happened over the course of the past, not even 24 hours. I know you're in Bloomington, and we're taking care of that. So impressions of this move, which happened fly by night, kind of. You know, 7:30 in the morning, all the presidents are on a conference call, unanimously a vote to add the Cardinals, exactly.
Trust me, I wish I was sleeping. It's not only an upgrade in basketball, it's an upgrade in football, too. And, you know, probably not an upgrade in market size, because Maryland supposedly brings the D.C. Baltimore market. So that's what the Big Ten was interested in, moving east and moving to into that market for the Big Ten network. So they grabbed that. And the ACC, you know, you have to recover in some way. And I know that at least it reportedly was considering, you know, several different options. To me, this always seemed like the best case scenario for the ACC. They had a historically strong basketball program, a recently strong football program, and a major market in the Louisville market. I think it's a home run for John Swofford. And listen, I don't like this stuff any more than anybody else. You look up now, and the leagues that we're going to have in 2 years from now aren't going to be the leagues that any of us grew up with. But, you know, this is the world we live in, and if you better be as proactive as possible. And it seems very clear at this point that John Swofford was trying to be that. Why move on Louisville so quickly? I mean, like at 7 a.m. this morning, because you didn't want to wait around and let the Big 12 think about maybe doing it. You go get Louisville before anybody else can, and that's what happened.
Let's just go to four mega conferences now. Honestly, let's cut out all of the movement that's going to take place, and let's just go to four right now.
I wish. I remember after, and I don't even remember what moves it was that happened, you know, about 2 months ago. But I can remember us all, you know, we were on a conference call, the football writers, basketball writers, our bosses, and somebody suggested, you know, all right, now it seems like it's finally settled. And I said, what? This stuff is never settled. Even when you think it's settled, it's not. And to Jeff's point, it will not be settled until we get to, you know, either four or at the most five super conferences. This stuff is not going away.
Absolutely not. I mean, this is just simply dress rehearsal for that. This is what's interesting is the exchange happening here. So Conference USA, it's got God knows how many members, 8, 10, 12 former members, teams, programs that were once part of Conference USA are moving or have moved to the Big East. And now the Big East will have 6 teams formerly of its residence in the ACC, and the ACC's lost them to the Big Ten. And it's just like, I mean, listen, hey, good for Louisville. Here's the thing. It's like, this move won't get a lot of criticism because it's good for Louisville and it's good for the ACC. And it shouldn't get a lot of criticism because the ACC is doing what it needs to do. And in the meantime, okay, it was going to be the best league before this. And now it just got even better because, as we mentioned, Louisville, you know, Goodman is an even better hoops product than Maryland.
Hey, there's no doubt today it is. And they're both, I think, top 10-ish basketball programs. Louisville's certainly done more recently. I think Mark Turgeon's going to get Maryland to the point in the next couple of years where they're fighting, for Elite Eights and Final Fours as well. But like Gary said, what I think certainly gives Louisville the edge right now is the football program. As long as they have Charlie Strong, which I'm not sure how long he's going to stay. But I think that football program certainly on the upswing, and they bring a lot, you know, geographically, a different region, you know, different market. So I think that'll help as well. You know, I just want to know when we're going to talk about Denver going to the Summit League.
The interesting thing about Louisville and its football program is that they've now won at a high level under two different guys. First, Bobby Petrino, and now Charlie Strong. And when you can do that, you know, that suggests that you've got a strong program as opposed to, you know, just a strong coach. We've seen guys take jobs, you know, before and sort of elevate schools to unusual levels. I mean, John Calipari at UMass or Urban Meyer at Utah. But when you can do it with two different coaches at an extremely high level, that suggests that there's something good about the job. And so I think
they have support. They have financial support. They have good fan support. Obviously, they're the only game in town, really. You know, I think you're right. I mean, they've sustained it over two guys, which differentiates themselves from a lot of other programs.
And now the ACC is feeling really good about itself, and I guess it should, because if you look at it, again, the television market thing, that's another scenario. But in terms of pure athletics, I do think, you know, the ACC is better off today than it was, say, a month ago. You're better off with Louisville than you were Maryland, although you do lose some tradition. That said, what happens when the Big Ten decides it wants Georgia Tech and Virginia or Georgia Tech and North Carolina? Because trust me, that's happening. And I know that the ACC presidents have vowed their allegiance to the – but come on, we've heard
nobody,
all
– nobody has any allegiance here.
Nobody has any allegiance. Here's things that we have consistently heard for more than a decade now, that – nobody, that a certain conference isn't interested in expanding any further, and that the schools that are in leagues aren't interested in going anywhere else. They're all committed. And then it blows up again every year or two, or in this world, every week or two. And so I suspect at some point the Big Ten will look at a Georgia Tech because of the Atlanta market and the academics, or Virginia because of the academics, or North Carolina because it's probably the biggest prize out there. And then those schools will have real decisions to make. And if they do, then the ACC will be wounded again. And if they are, they'll go shopping right back at the Big East like always.
Exactly.
There's going to be nothing left. There's going to be nothing left in the store.
There's nothing left on the shelves. It's like the Big East is like a grocery store, like 3 days before a hurricane warning.
That's
like,
right.
Like there's, hey, you should have got here earlier. Everything's gone.
Everything of any value is gone.
And there's plenty of talk out there about the Big Ten, you know, whispers, I should say, about the Big Ten picking possible ACC schools that it could add. You know, there's always been talk that Clemson and Florida State aren't happy in the ACC. Meanwhile, you get, you know, Cincinnati and UConn are at this point are just dying to get out of the Big East and get into the ACC. We'll see. I mean, the thing is now, as we discuss this, it's reached the point where, like, Tulane going to the Big East was shocking. Parrish, I mean, I know you found that shocking. And
stupid, not shocking, stupid.
Right, and see, that was done only for TV market purposes, which is stupid because Tulane isn't a player in New Orleans, hardly as it is.
Right. I mean, who watches Tulane even in New Orleans? Nobody.
It would be like a school adding Long Beach State to get the Los Angeles market. You know, it doesn't make any sense. And so with most of these moves, even if I disagree with them for whatever reasons, and if for nothing more than they're just obvious money grabs by people who try to pretend that's not what they're about, you can at least sort of make sense of them on some level. I mean, Maryland's going to make more money in the Big Ten than it would have in the ACC. So, you know, do I think Maryland's a good fit for the Big Ten? No. Do I think it's going to make the basketball job more difficult trying to recruit East Coast kids to play in the Midwest? Yes. But, you know, it's a money thing. So I get it. The Tulane thing, I have no idea why the Beast would move. You're not adding anything in value in terms of athletics. You're not adding anything in value, I don't believe, in terms of television market because, like Jeff said, Tulane is not a player in New Orleans. So I trust that the people making these decisions for the Big East are smarter than I am, but I can't figure out how or why in this specific scenario.
By the way, our Jeremy Fowler of CBSSports.com, college football writer, insider, who's kind of taken the mantle from Brett McMurphy, who's gone off to ESPN. And Goodman couldn't be more thrilled because, you know, he did his legwork break in Denver to the Summit League earlier.
That's right. I'm done for the year.
He said, well, here's the interesting thing. So all these moves, obviously, always are for football and for TV and for the, you know, ever-present footprint. But Fowler said, listen, you know, 80% of ACC revenue comes from football. But in this case, basketball for Louisville was a big factor in the voting. And that's because Louisville actually, you know, every year Forbes comes out with its most valuable programs and biggest profits. Louisville's consistently top five. So this one legitimately was as much about basketball as football as anything else. So that's, I don't know.
I don't believe that for a second.
You don't? Okay. I'm just, that's what he reported. So, you know.
I'm not dismissing.
Yeah, I know you're not dismissing him. He's just,
But this is, you know, Louisville is the strongest possible football program you could get. And I believe that that's why that Louisville was the clear choice to be the pick here. Let me put it this way. If Louisville's basketball program was mediocre, I still believe it would have been selected to go to the ACC. If Louisville's football program was mediocre, I do not believe it would have been selected to go to the ACC. And now, you know, we'll see what happens next because, you know, all of this stuff is sort of – people get jumpy. You know, they make decisions that they wouldn't normally make based on the idea that, well, if we don't do it, somebody else is going to, right? Like, how many times have you heard a story about some stupid murder in some stupid city, and the explanation for it is, well, you know, some guy pulled a knife, and so then I pulled a gun, and I didn't want to shoot him, but, like, I was scared that he was going to stab me. And it's a little bit like what goes on here. I don't know that the SEC necessarily wants to expand, but what if the SEC looks around and says, well, we don't want the ACC getting any stronger. Let's go ahead and pick them apart right now. Florida State, Clemson, come join us. I mean, there's going to be another big move, and I won't be surprised that in the same way the Memphises and the SMUs are joining the Big East and then having it ripped out from underneath them, it would not surprise me in any way to have Louisville going to the ACC, and then we look up in 2 years, and it's not this version of the ACC because the SEC's taken two and the taken two.
I know. And what's interesting is, you know, Rick Pitino, as we record this, I'm just tracking Twitter to make sure no other team leaves for another league, and Pitino's on Spin City now because, I mean, he's like, this is great for the league. We're in. What a smart move. It's awesome. Dude, Pitino was the biggest critic, basketball coach-wise, of this stuff, you know, 8 months ago. Yeah, I mean, he was killing everything, but now he's got no choice. I mean, but he put himself in the bad position to begin with because Louisville.
This is, you know what, it's almost humorous because this is Rick. It's perfect for Pitino because he changes his mind so often anyway. This is the ideal situation.
He could be retired by the time Louisville gets there.
Now, listen, when you sell Pepsi, I mean, when you work for Pepsi, you sell Pepsi. When you work for Coke, you sell Coke.
That's right.
That's what Rick Pitino's been doing.
I hear you. Well, we'll leave the realignment talk there until we're, you know, mandated to discuss it again, which could very well be on next Wednesday's podcast. We can get to hoops. Parrish was in Bloomington last night to cover Indiana, Carolina, and a great first 15 minutes of a watch, and then it got really boring really fast, and then it got just to be kind of an embarrassing blowout. What was your takeaway from this? What did you write about on the site, Gary?
Yeah, well, you know, it was 31-31 after 15 minutes, and though the score was tied, you could sort of see that this was going to bust open at any second. Indiana was getting easy basket after easy basket, and North Carolina was sort of relying on, you know, James Michael McAdoo turnaround 9-foot jumpers. I mean, like, you just knew that this wasn't going to keep up, and then it just exploded on them. And, you know, I think one thing I pointed out in the column, if my math was correct, that after it was 31-31, Indiana scored 52 of the next 72 points in the game. And, you know, the lead got up to 32. I think it finished at 24, but that's only because Tom Crean put in scrubs at the end. The atmosphere was just terrific. I mean, as good as it gets. I know some people argue, you know, Allen Fieldhouse is the best, and I can't disagree. I've been there. It's wonderful. Cameron Indoor, where I'll be tonight, is the best. I can't disagree. It's wonderful. But it's tough to beat Assembly Hall when they've got a good basketball team like they do right now. Last night was top-notch, and it just – beyond the fact that Indiana looked like a national championship caliber team, looked like a number one team in the country, and North Carolina looked like a team that lost four top 20 picks to the NBA draft, it reminded me, as I've been, you know, to Brooklyn for a neutral site game and to Madison Square Garden for neutral site games and to Atlanta for neutral site games, we've had some really nice basketball matchups already in November. Last night was really the first marquee on-campus game of this season, and you just can't beat that. And that's where college basketball needs to be played as much as possible. I get the rationale behind playing neutral site games, and I enjoy a good neutral site game as much as anybody. But you cannot beat college basketball in a big-time arena on a big-time campus like what we saw last night in Bloomington.
What did you think, Goodman? Carolina-wise, specifically more than anything. Well, I mean, to me, I was surprised by how badly Carolina got beat. Kind of opened my eyes to think that that they won't even threaten to win the ACC. I don't want to totally overreact, but I didn't think they would get run out like that, dude. I didn't think that was all Indiana. I thought part of that was on UNC.
You know, the one thing is, and Gary can probably attest to this after seeing them, I saw them in the preseason, and they just don't seem to fit together well.
No.
You know, they're missing a lot. They're missing a low post score. They're missing a leader. You know, they're missing veterans, you know, good veterans. Their veterans are Dexter Strickland and Leslie McDonald. They're just okay. They've got wings, but okay wings. They don't push the ball extremely well. They don't get back in transition. I mean, I'm sounding like they're going to be a 10-win team. They're not. They're going to win 20-plus.
Right.
Going to challenge for the ACC title because they have too many holes.
I will tell you this. McAdoo's a stud. I mean, he wasn't efficient last night, but, I mean, the talent stuff that makes you want to take him in the top five of a draft, it's all there, and it's very easy to see. He's terrific. I think they're probably relying on him a little too much by necessity, but he is a terrific
guy. Bullock didn't give him any help. I mean, he sat there and was almost scared by Victor Oladipo.
No, you're exactly right about that. And I really like Marcus Paige. Last night was the first time I had a chance to see him.
Smooth. Really?
He's really smooth. So those two guys, when I watched them last night, here's what I came away with. McAdoo is a real North Carolina top-tier player for a North Carolina Roy Williams team.
That's
Marcus
right.
Paige?
Will be.
Yeah, it will be someday. The rest of those guys are guys that should be role players for a great North Carolina team, and they're being asked to be more than that, and that's a problem.
I thought Bullock was better than he was. He is better than he was last night. Now, listen, when Victor Oladipo locks in defensively.
Oh, I love him.
Yes.
But he's not always like that, guys. He takes plenty of plays off, but last night, in that type of atmosphere, he's obviously going to be locked in.
Goodman, you had the unfortunate responsibility of going to the Bahamas, and so we have not talked to you since you got back. Obviously, we chatted just before you were leaving last week. So you saw a slew of really good teams. Duke won the whole thing. What's up?
You want to know my highlight from the trip?
Well, aside from the water slides, of course.
Yeah, the water slides and the lazy river there was off the hook.
I love the lazy river so much.
River ever.
Parrish is getting excited about the lazy river. Yeah,
lazy rivers. I love lazy anythings.
No. This is the greatest though because you don't even have to paddle on this lazy river. It's got like rapids going throughout. I mean, this thing is unbelievable. The only bad part is that the hotel, one of the towers, they got like four towers there. One of them kind of blocks the sun out part of the time. So at times you're not.
That's a problem.
Warm enough.
Yeah, I mean that's just
really
it's troubling.
Of that. Can you imagine going to a 5-star resort and having one of the massive towers partially block the sun sometimes?
It's horrible. I mean,
my God, what a way to spend the Thanksgiving holiday.
I feel bad for you, man.
It really was. I'll tell you, I already booked it for next year so Gary can't get in there. And I put a block on his name. So there's no chance he gets there next year. But listen, the play was terrific. The teams were great.
Yeah.
The venue was pretty good. It was different, you know. It was, you know.
What's it like in that room? By the way, we were wondering Parrish thought the ceiling was like 30 feet high. I was like, "There's no way that ceiling is 30."
No, the ceiling was high, but it was just a little dark, and
they got
a few kinks. But Lee Miller, who basically did this thing from scratch, she did an unbelievable job. I mean, you saw the field is it's better than Maui now. It's better than any other tournament, and I think it's going to stay that way because, frankly, it's only a few hours.
Travel, exactly.
Travel so much easier. The only thing they're missing is a big TV deal, but that's going to come.
Oh,
yeah, and like at this point, like I almost wonder. And I know, you know, like it's not my money, but like when you're running that kind of resort, why not just build a little badass 5,000 seat arena?
And they may eventually if they know they can sustain this. They obviously don't want to put that type of money in yet.
Right.
But I think you're absolutely right. And I'll tell you what, it was really good teams. I mean, look at you see a team like VCU that we all come out of there saying, wow, they're. And we said it before the season. We said they were a top 25 team. They lost a bad one to Wichita at home, but they come out of there 1-2, and we can make a case that they're still top 25 good in terms of talent, in terms of how they're going to be the rest of the year. But that's how stacked and loaded this event was.
Absolutely. And you saw Duke there. Parrish is going to see Duke tonight on Wednesday against Ohio State. So Goodman, first you. I mean. After what Indiana did, it looks like we got cleared, you know, a 1-2 there, however you want to put them in that order. I mean, right now we have Duke as number one for your guys as top 25-1. Can you admit you were wrong in some regards to what Duke is, or are they
absolutely.
Just.
Absolutely.
Okay, there we go.
No, absolutely. Now I knew Mason Plumlee was going to be really good this year. I did. I mean, that's one that I think Gary can agree that. I was pushing for him to, I think, be a second team. I don't know where we put him on it, but second team preseason All-American.
In fairness, you push for like 15 different white kids.
Well, I also got Bill Pressey on the first team. So wait till Michael Dixon comes back and that team will get rolling, really rolling. But anyway, for Duke, Mason Plumlee, you're going to see a completely different player tonight, Gary, than you remember seeing the last time. In person.
I saw him 2 weeks ago.
Oh, you did? Saw him 2 weeks ago. So you saw. He was a man. I mean, he's demanding the ball.
He's perfect.
And here's what I'll tell you about this Duke team that completely, basically differentiates them from last year's team is, you know what? Their chemistry is so much better without Austin Rivers. It's not even close. Kelly, Seth Curry, Mason Plumlee are all kind of leading together. Plumlee's more vocal than the other two, but they all kind of respect each other, lead well together. The key is still going to be Quinn Cook. Everybody's up in arms saying Quinn Cook's back. He's the guy we thought he'd be. I hope that's the case, but I'm still not 100% sold that Quinn Cook's going to be this stable, this consistent throughout the whole year. If he is, they'll be a top five team all year.
Yeah, listen, we were clearly, I sort of always hedge my bets on Duke because when I looked at this roster, the roster in and of itself didn't look like much, right? But the roster in and of itself didn't look like much. That was an automatic.
Because you're bringing up the Duke page right now. I'm calling you out on that. Go ahead.
Oh, he's checking stats.
No, I was looking at the order. I was looking at the order of the wins that they got. All right? So you look at the individual pieces. And I said, I don't know how good this team can be. But in reality, I believe the number was 14 of the past 16 seasons. They haven't finished worse than second in the ACC. So if you're expecting them to, like, slip to third, which is where a lot of people had them picked, you're expecting them to do something that
– You had them third.
I'm going to plead the fifth on that. I'm not sure that's true.
Third.
You'd have to look that up. And so my point was always like they still got Mike Krzyzewski. That guy's pretty good at this. And you look at him now, they've got, the win over Kentucky, which you could sort of dismiss because Ryan Harrow wasn't playing. But then they get a win over Minnesota, like a blowout win. And you could sort of dismiss it if you didn't know how good Minnesota was. But then you see what Minnesota did last night to Florida State, and it looks like that's a real team. Then they handle VCU, which had just blown out Memphis. And then they handle Louisville, which was without Gorky, but still, what do you, at some point, they are what they are. And I don't really know if they're the best team in the country, but they got the best resume to date and clearly better than anybody, than I think almost anybody anticipated.
No, they look really good. Look like a team that should be able to win the ACC. I don't want to say without too much trouble because, I mean, they're going to hit some prep holes. I know. Hey, listen, but hey, wait. Yeah. NC State has not looked as good, and you guys were on this rightfully. So if I'm going to give you some crap about Duke, listen, you weren't totally sold on NC State, right? As the kind of team a lot of people thought they would be, and I mean, right now they look okay, but Michigan's awesome. Don't get me wrong, I love Michigan. In fact, I'm loving them more by the day. But wow. I mean, NC State didn't even look like they had a chance last night against Michigan. And if you're truly like a top 10, top even 15 kind of team, you should at least threaten in that game. But maybe it's just
no
Michigan.
Killers. They got no killers in that team. A lot of guys that you question.
Your guy, by the way, that you now have taken responsibility for, Lorenzo. I mean, he's been okay.
Oh, he's been bad.
But
he's not okay. Let's call it what it is. He's not been good.
I'm too nice sometimes. Yeah. So that maybe that's as much of a problem as anything, right?
Yeah. No, I think so, because if Lorenzo Brown brings leadership and intensity to that team, they're a completely different team, because I think they could feed off him, but they have not done so. And I'll tell you what. That Michigan team,
awesome.
Are you going to find a more fun team to watch on the offensive end than Michigan?
I don't know. Gary and I watched them in person last week. Oh. Gary, I mean, how good were they? Especially like when Hardaway Jr., who last year was a different player, okay, he has improved his game. I mean, he loves him some him, but Gary, that they look really good.
I think Michigan's terrific to watch offensively. I love Trey Burke. And then, I think the same night – that we saw Michigan in person, or maybe it was actually Saturday night or Sunday. I can't remember. I just remember lying in a hotel room in New York and watching Creighton in Arizona State. And when Creighton's got it going offensively, they're really fun to watch too.
You can't compare the two.
No. I'm not saying
college basketball teams. Yes, you can.
I'm not saying
they're not at the same level. They're not at the same level.
Hold on. They're not the same level basketball team. I agree. But offensively, they're both fun to watch. I think that's what we were trying to define here.
Dermott's fun to watch.
Hey, he was that particular night. Now, I haven't seen him every game this year, obviously.
Times. I mean, he's fun to watch. No
doubt. He is exposing people down there, like just like really quick on the block and scoring down there.
He's so unorthodox. He just finishes like in both hands and like off the wrong foot sometimes. Yeah. I mean, he's fun to watch. No
he
doubt.
Is a lot of fun to watch. Like, I think sometimes people think he's just a tall white. You know, people who don't watch him, they go, he's a tall white kid. He can step away and shoot it. He can get down there in the post and get the ball and like score on you too. Like he's a gifted dude. He's fun to watch.
I had one NBA guy in the Bahamas tell me that he guaranteed he'll go in the top 20. Okay. I was like, wow.
Wow.
But there were differing opinions on him. I had another NBA scout tell me that I had him ranked too high, and that was like, I think I had him at like 35 or 40. Yeah.
I just wonder if he's a kid who's going to get picked apart in workouts, you know, for everything he can't do, as opposed to this. He can clearly rebound the ball because he's consistently done it for 2 years now. He can make shots, and if you're tall and can make shots, that in and of itself gets you a job in the NBA. And then you can throw him the ball in the post, and I think he could score on NBA power forward.
His position is a little bit unclear right now. What can he guard?
Right. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. But can he score on the block in the NBA and make jumpers in the NBA? I don't think there's any question.
Poor man's Dirk, in a way, because Dirk can be kind of quirky in his scoring, right?
Dirk's one of the best ever.
Let's I'm saying crazy. Poor man. I didn't say affluent man. I didn't say median salary man. I said poor man. I don't know. Just tossing it out there. We're going to wrap this pot up because
if your comparison is tall white guy who can score in a variety of ways,
naturally that's the way I went. Of course. Now we got to wrap this pot up because Goodman actually has to. He's got to go somewhere. Where you got to go, man? A place you have not been in decades, right?
Yeah, I'm going to the laundromat.
The laundromat, man. I thought you got a new contract from CBS and you
the
still.
Laundromat. No.
It fell right out of the laundromat.
It fell through. They gave me just kind of what was left over from your deal. That was it.
Ooh, I see. I have a nice washer and dryer.
We got no washer and dryer. We are moving tomorrow. And I have like one day to pack up my office here. So I'm kind of to the gun here and got to pack up, got to do my laundry because I came back from a week away and realized I don't have anything. I got nothing. No,
sounds like
book.
Sounds like somebody should have probably spent a little less time in the lazy river.
Yeah.
You know what's kind of, you know what's cool though when you go to the laundromat now?
No.
Wait,
old,
what?
Old machines. The old machines, you'd stick the quarters in and they'd stick up and you'd push the thing forward.
Sure.
That's the last time I used the laundromat. Now you don't have those. They go in automatic. You put the quarters in automatic. It's really
Look how excited you are
I'm
right now.
I'm really excited.
The advancement of modern technology has come so far.
You would think you could swipe your credit card at the laundromat.
That's what I thought he was going to say.
No, no, they're not there yet. At least not at my local laundromat down here.
Okay. Here's the honest to God truth. I have never used a laundromat.
No, that's not shocking whatsoever.
In college, you didn't.
I mean, I don't even think you've ever done one load of laundry, dude.
No, I'm really good at laundry. In fact, I would argue. Kelly would argue probably against it. But I would argue that I do more laundry in the parish household than anybody else.
That's because you sit around all day.
Yes, I sit around all day. Says the guy who was just bragging about it, his adventures in the lazy river.
I'm going to
send you a picture of the lazy river later. So you can see what you're not going to be doing next November.
Oh, wow. Now, you know what? New York was fun. We saw some good games there, too. But I do plan on being in Atlanta next November. I think that's the plan at this moment.
As I said, the problem with you in Atlantis is what?
The requirement for
the water slides.
Good. I was wondering if we were going to be able to go 30 minutes without a short joke.
We went 30 minutes without a Memphis remark.
We didn't talk Memphis, so I had to get in a short joke.
Yeah, we'll save Memphis for next week. We're gonna take a week off.
Right. They're still going to be losing. It looks like we could still have plenty of.
Hey, Josh has got a. He's got. They're rough on him in the city right now, man. You need to call him and just pep him up.
I love the fact that they now have that new media policy, so no players can go on Gary Parrish's radio show. It's great.
How about that? They went 1-2 in the Bahamas because they couldn't guard anybody, and they think the way to fix that is to somehow limit media access.
I feel bad for Josh because we know, is there a coach that's more media friendly in the world, in any sport, in any level than Josh Pastner?
No, he's the absolute best. And it really is tough to watch him go through this because back home, like, I mean, they're on his ass, you know, like, you know, they're
handled it so well. Honestly, the way that guy handles it in terms of, now, I don't know if it's all front and he goes home and just breaks down and cries.
I think he goes home and breaks down and cries.
You do?
I would be surprised if he, dude. You, for people who don't live there, you have no idea how intense it is. I mean, it is. You know, Kentucky's obviously a different level, but I don't know how many other places are a different level in terms of the intensity and the attention that's paid to that program. And when they start the way they start for the third straight year, preseason ranked and very early unranked, it's a tough deal there right now.
All right. Well. So much for No Memphis on this podcast. Guys, you are great. Goodman, get to the laundromat.
It was great.
I got to switch it. I got to move them to the dryer now. I got to get like $6 more in quarters. It's expensive, you know.
Yeah, I know. It's brutal. Hey, Parrish, make sure you catch that flight. We don't want you to miss the game tonight in North Carolina. So
yeah, get on that flight, though.
Get on the plane, Parrish. And we'll be back Friday. Seth Davis will be joining us. Look forward to that. Hopefully teams are all still in their same conferences in 48 hours. If not, we'll be forced to discuss that as well. Have a good couple days here. We'll talk to you on Friday.